Comments made on the Serotalk Podcast Network are those of the individuals and do not represent Serotalk Corporation, its staff, management, board of directors, or third-party resellers.
Welcome to the Serotalk Podcast.
Welcome to the Serotalk Podcast, your portal to the accessible digital lifestyle.
www.serotalk.com.
A production of Serotech Corporation, makers of System Access, the System Access Mobile Network, and SA2Go. Learn about new technology, cool software, useful websites, education, information, entertainment, user comments, and much more. And now, here's your host, Jamie Pauls.
Welcome to Serotalk Podcast 112 for June 11th, 2012. I'm Jamie Pauls.
I'm Lisa Salinger.
I'm Joe Steinkamp. Hey, Lisa's with us. Yay!
She is. She's back.
Good to be back.
I don't know if have we done this conglomeration, this combo, this configuration? Has this been a Jamie, Lisa, Joe? I think we have, haven't we?
I don't know. I was thinking we had.
I've done it with Ricky.
Yeah, it's just, okay. Well, this is strange. All right, cool. Okay. I'm all ready for newness. Let's do it.
Listeners, you tell us. Have we done this before? They probably know better than we do.
They'll know the podcast number. Yeah.
It's right.
Yeah.
Well, this week is National Change Your Password Week, I think.
Absolutely.
Donut day. I didn't get you anything. I'm sorry, Jamie.
Oh, darn it.
What do you get somebody for Password Week? A new password.
Exactly.
Actually, I think you get them a package of sticky notes if they can see.
That's right, that they stick on the side of the computer with their new password.
Exactly, or under the keyboard or something.
Beautiful. So give your best friend a packet of sticky notes and celebrate National Password Week.
If you are one of the 6.5 million people who are on LinkedIn who have had your password hacked, too bad. Sorry about that. you might want to do something about that.
Change that a little bit. Or eHarmony or Last.fm.
Yeah.
Yeah, just a couple of sites. That's kind of weird and scary. And some of those sites also link to other parts of your life, LinkedIn especially. So you're actually giving people access to more than just your LinkedIn profile. You're giving them access in some ways to your calendar and other things if you sync your LinkedIn to other parts of, say, Outlook or other add-ons.
It was kind of strange to follow this story. First of all, the one really disturbing thing to me was that these passwords were online and a bunch of hackers were apparently on a forum asking each other for help on how to crack them. That's a little, you know, a little crowdsourcing on how to crack your password. Nice. Not.
And it turns out that some of these passwords were kind of obvious, as we have in the next story in the show notes. Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm finally getting better about that. I really am. I really have been, in different times of my life, had a tendency to use one really comfortable password, like a good old pair of shoes. And that's really not a good thing to do, actually. Because especially the more stuff that we do online, banking, email, you name it, you know?
Well, and mobiles.
Yeah.
The fact that you're going to do a lot more mobile-type stuff and have things. So if somebody gets your phone, they practically have your life. We've talked about that on the show once or twice before.
Yeah. No, practically about it, I'm afraid. They do. And, you know, I think the times really have changed. And it's time that we change with them. Because I remember when I was first online and I'd have one or two passwords. And then there'd be a site where I'd think, wow, I really want to keep this information secure. So I would do a variation on that one password, or I would add another password and start doing variations to that. And it was almost a pride thing for me. You know, I don't need to put my passwords down anywhere. I can keep them in my head. Well, the more passwords I have, the more I find that that ship has sailed. And I've talked to people who say, oh, well, I have all my passwords in a file on my computer called passwords. And that's a little scary too.
Unencrypted, sitting out there, you know, I keep it on the desktop right there. So that way everybody can find it.
Exactly. So I can find it. Yes. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It's in my recent documents area. That way everybody can see it. And now, especially if you share the computer with multiple family members and stuff like that.
Yeah. And I think really, if you can kind of fragment your passwords, what I mean is, for example, I know of people who put their passwords in their contact list. So they have an entry in that list for LinkedIn, and then they put the password in the notes section. That way, even if someone starts looking through your contact list, it's a little harder for them to obtain a all of those passwords because they're not in one centralized location.
Well, quick survey, do you use your browser's ability to remember passwords? Because I don't. I'll to put it in manually every time.
Only on sites where I really don't care.
To be honest, I do some.
See, that's the danger there, Jamie, is that, again, if you get compromised, then I'm into everything because you left it, you know, remember my password.
That's true.
And there are sites where I think, heck, it won't matter, you know, but then I think, well,
eHarmony.
Okay, so what's the, well, yeah. No, I was thinking of like
some
book-related websites. I don't want to mention names, you know.
Right.
You think, well, that's not a big deal. And then you think, well, if someone comes in as me, they could purchase things as me. They could violate site policies as me. And so it's one of those things that just about everybody can find some room for improvement, I think.
Well, and I was joking about eHarmony. They were also one of the other services to get nailed this week in the hashtag. And, you know, there was a Last.fm. Some people may not want people to know that, you know, Jamie's a big Justin Bieber fan. And now that all that's out there for everybody to see. No, I'm kidding, of course. But the idea is that you think that this doesn't have, like Lisa said, that kind of ripple effect. But the more that, say, you connect to Facebook Connect, or you're starting to tweet things you never tweeted because you forgot that you hooked Twitter up into whatever service this was. You know, it's part of the connected web, and it's kind of scary, but you have to think about the privacy policies, the what you allow apps to talk back and forth to each other, or, you know, how you want some apps to talk back and forth to each other. And you have to take some steps to change those passwords every once in a while. Unfortunately, in this case, you know, the service that you're using got hacked. And there's not much you can do about that other than to run in and immediately change your password. So if you do share a password with other services, they don't start guessing at, say, your Hotmail or your Gmail or another password that you might want to keep safe. So just a word of warning, and definitely read the show notes about what you can do to kind of avoid these kinds of things and minimize them to the best of your abilities.
Joe, you were as happy as a kid in a candy store at the first of the week. Something about a little conference called E3.
Yeah, the Electronic Entertainment Expo. I used to sell video games in the 90s, and I've been a game player since the early days of Atari in the 70s and 80s. And it elates me to no end that I actually get paid to learn about video games. That's actually cool, because now mom can't say you sat there not, you know, what are you going to do with all that time sitting in front of that game console? Aha, it was a job. Anyway.
I was reviewing it for the Sarah Talk podcast.
Well, hey, I've done Kinect. Yeah, there we go.
Yes,
hey.
Yes, you have.
I've found ways to make that valuable. To somebody, I'm not. Sure, the whole network. But the E3 Expo happened this week, and it kind of outlined some things that are coming up for the holiday season. The reason why we cover it here on Sero Talk is because video games can drive hardware on computers, and computers are, of course, what we use with assistive technology. And more those casual games are kind of driving what happens in trends online and the network. Plus, you might be considering purchasing some video game consoles for your children or grandchildren or neighbors or friends. So we're just going to cover this very briefly. Nintendo has a new console called the Wii U, W-I-I space U, that is coming out this Christmas. Unfortunately, they had a very disappointing show and did not mention things about cost or availability other than it's happening this winter. So it is the successor to the very popular Wii console, and it uses a very large controller with a touchscreen on it. And the idea that some parents might like is that your young children can actually play their games on the controller, not have to take up the big television in the family room if everybody's sort of watching a show or something. So that's kind of a family-friendly thing. And, of course, Nintendo's always very family-friendly. They have some health programs coming out, the new Wii Fit, which was very, very popular with people, where you stand on a board and it measures your weight and helps you do exercises.
Yeah, I wasn't very good at balancing on that thing, by the way. It gave me a very poor score.
Stand on one leg, hop around.
Yes. Yeah.
Sony also has a new handheld system, which is pretty neat. It has a touchscreen on the front and a sort of touch panel on the back. Unfortunately, the problem with the new Sony handheld is that it's very expensive and people are waiting for that to come down. It also has a version that's 3G, so you have a Wi-Fi one and a 3G one, and those are like $249 and $299. And in the case of the 3G, you're still paying for a 3G connection at $20 or $30 a month. So that unit, as awesome as people have reviewed it and said it is a great handheld gaming system, is still a little too costly in an age of iPads and iPhones and 99-cent apps. Even though a lot of people like myself prefer to have a gaming pad over a touchscreen, but I digress. The awesome thing, and this is why it's in the news this week, is Microsoft announced what was called Smart Glass. And this is kind of neat technology. The idea that you can use your Xbox and Xbox Live on devices you already own. So the two things that I've talked about just previously, the Nintendo and the Sony devices, mean that you have to buy a Wii U and its controller to be able to use it. And in the case of Sony, to be able to hook up your PlayStation Vita, which is their handheld device, to your PS3, you have to go out and spend the money on a Vita. Microsoft's coming at it from a totally different perspective. They're going the Amazon Netflix kind of route by saying, okay, we're going to make it that the software works on iPads, iPhones, Windows phones, Google tablets, whatever, and let you control aspects of the console and the service from any device that you already own. Therefore, you don't necessarily have to go out and buy a whole new device to be able to access this. Now, it's not just video games, although that was demonstrated because it is a video game show, but they demonstrated watching movies and hitting pause on your television or turning it off there and picking up your iPad and, you know, picking up where you left off, or grabbing all your social contacts. There were also some new things for the Kinect, and I can tell you that I'm probably going to get divorced later this fall. The NFL Madden game that is football allows you to actually call plays to your Xbox and say things like set hut and or turn, you know, to have the receiver turn so you can throw it to them. And as geeky and as cool as I love this idea, I'm quite sure my family members will want a pillow over my face at some point after the 40th time they hear set hut and things like that. But so there was some neat stuff. The big thing about this week is that this is a transition year. Next year, there's two new video game consoles coming from both Sony and Microsoft. So this is kind of the, hey, everything's going great. Pay no attention to that big price tag behind the curtain next year. So everything's good. Everything's fine. But the smart glass technology is being seen by many people as a sign that Microsoft is changing its ways and not necessarily becoming hardware dependent. They're getting back to what they do best, which is software. That's what the company does. And I think that's really exciting because that seems to fit in with Windows 8, seems to fit in with what they're doing with Windows Phone 8. And it shows that Microsoft is not becoming the closed-minded architecture that Apple has become.
So there was a little bit of discussion on Twitter about the fact that because these consoles are doing so much besides gaming, that maybe we should be concerned about accessibility. What are your thoughts on that?
I agree. I specifically know Jeff Bishop was very upset because his family has an Xbox and he'd like to use it. Buddy Brandon on our team has an Xbox. And he and I have talked a little bit about how to use the voice controls from the demo I did in Saratalk 100. The problem with Kinect in a way is that there's no rumble. You put your hands up in the air and you interact with the screen. And unless you have auditory signals, there's no real way that you've done or completed something. Whereas with some of the other controllers like the Nintendo Wii, which some blind people use with some games like Wii Sports, where they do the bowling or things like that, the controller vibrates. So you know that you've pushed a button or interacted upon something, or you have some tactile sensation to know that things are going on. And so we're kind of limited in certain ways about how we can use these consoles. I don't use Netflix hardly all with any other device but my Xbox 360 because I can be across the room and tell it to pause or skip or fast forward or stop, and I can turn the console off with my voice. It did, like I said in my review, it did require me to do a lot of memorization, but once when I had the memorization down, generally you can interact with it unless Netflix changes the way they do things. That never happens.
No.
But then it's just some rememorization. It's awkward, but it happens. What I will say is that for someone who is, as we said in tech chat last year during our E3 coverage, Xbox.com is way easier to use with a screen reader than the Sony site or the Nintendo site. So if you're trying to monitor what your child is playing, or if you want to limit what they're playing or change the allowance that you give them or see what friends they're talking to, Microsoft is way easier to use with a screen reader on their Xbox site than others. And that can be a big difference for some people as well. So there is some accessibility there for TTY. Microsoft is one of the few companies that advertises their TTY lines for those who are deaf, which I think is also very admirable. But I agree. It would be nice. But again, these are video game consoles, so their main mission is pretty much a visual nature. And I would love, right. I would love, let's say, for the Internet Explorer 9 that's coming to Microsoft Xbox to be executable, so we could do something like SA2Go on it or something like that. But I don't know that that's going to happen. And it may have to be the next generation of consoles, because the architecture is already kind of really old by this point. And so maybe the next round we might be able to have more accessibility.
Very good. I definitely wanted your thoughts on that. Well, continuing in Microsoft land, Lisa, don't believe the lies. You can have a start menu on Windows 8 if you want one. Question is, do you really want one?
What is always a surprise to me, and really shouldn't be that much of a surprise, is the people that are the first to install, in this case, Windows 8 on their computers, the moment they get it installed, they're jumping up and down and saying, I want it to behave just like Windows 7 or just like Windows XP. And, I mean, I love the start menu in Windows 7. I think it's great. I think it's very convenient. And if I choose to have a start menu by using a program or a workaround, I would do that after I was thoroughly familiar with Windows 8. To me, it doesn't make sense to start changing things back to the way they were until you really understand and have a good working knowledge of how they are right now. Because, I mean, how many people, when Vista and Windows 7 came out, wanted the Windows menu to look like it had in XP? And if they did that, they really missed out on, you know, this great start menu, this search interface where you press the start menu and, you know, you're just dropped into a search box and you're good to go and you can find what you need and it's great.
I feel bad for them though, because what can you do? How can you innovate if people are mired and stuck and don't want to accept anything new? And we have an article right here that says, will businesses, you know, how will Windows 8 work with business and enterprise, and how will it adopt? Will it be XP or Vista? And, you know, what's kind of funny, we talked about this a little bit after we recorded Sarah Spectives last week in the group, kind of the show after the show. And we talked about how people have this lovely, pastoral, beautiful image of XP. XP, when it was initially released in 2001, it took like 8 months before assistive technology caught up with it. We weren't on the initial launch of XP. And furthermore, XP was buggy. We were coming out of Millennium, and it was hard to tell which was buggier at the time. And XP doesn't get...
Everybody wanted 98.
Exactly. And XP didn't get nice until Surface Pack 2.
It's kind of like this glorifying the dead, you know? He was a no account, no good. And then once he's dead, it's like, oh, he's a saint.
I remember him well. You know? He was such a great guy. He was a quiet man, a loner. No, wait. That's wrong. That was the wrong speech.
I mean, he was mean to his dog, but he was you know,
other
like...
Other than that, not a problem.
They glorified the dead.
So I think they're stuck with Windows 8, you know, because no matter what you do, people are going to be upset. They're either going to really like it or they're going to really hate it because it's not what they already know.
Right.
And I find, you know, I used to think it was just brand new computer users who were that way. And I don't really think it's a skill level as much as it is a mindset.
I agree.
And in all honesty, what bothers me is when people, in this case, you know, I've mostly seen this with blind people, don't like a new feature and they say, it's not accessible. It's like that's the thing that they fall back on. I remember somebody saying that Windows 7 was not accessible, and it was like, you know,
goodness.
it's almost like an excuse. It's a safety net. We can hide behind it because we can say it's not accessible.
So the two words they need to stick on the end of that sentence is "to me." It's not accessible to me because I haven't learned how to use it.
Yeah, so exactly.
I hear you. Plus, that makes it tough when you talk to developers. I mean, if you just call someone up and start chewing them out, your site's not accessible. Well, maybe it is if you're using X Screen Reader and you have this skill level.
There you go. This browser, exactly. this. I mean, take it from the developer's standpoint. You know, how many browsers do you support now? Which versions of software do you accept as a minimal? You know, if someone is using version 4 and the current version of something is 12 or 13, then, you know, good grief. What can you do? It's kind of a fighting battle. And then you get back to the multi-screen reader philosophy that you were saying, which is I'm using this on Windows. Well, then, you know, Apple has its own rules and its own screen reader. And how does VoiceOver handle it? And which one is the one I should be working with? And that's where universal design comes in. We had a new Firefox this week. Firefox 13 was released. And people were saying online that, you know, wow, my screen reader is working better with it than ever before. A lot of us in screen reader land didn't change anything. That was Firefox that changed and needed to change and still needs to change. And so it's the age old, I want to blame my AT, when really sometimes it's not the AT, it's the actual developer themselves. And we need to work with developers and educate developers. But at the same time, there has to be some realistic understanding that, you know, if I'm using a version that is way old, you know, it's just not realistic that that's going to work.
And I think we forget that sometimes the same irritants, the same pitfalls to us are for other people as well. You know, I used to think that disgust with the ribbons of Office were that was a blindness-specific thing. Well, you know what? Sighted people hate them about as much as we do. And, you know, people used to say all the time, the ribbons aren't accessible. Sure they are. I have just as much opportunity to get lost as my sighted colleague does in said ribbons.
On tech podcasts, people say, "Oh, Chrome crashed," you know. But I'm reading these articles that says that Chrome is the greatest thing since sliced bread, or I stopped using Firefox because it got slow. Well, then great, okay, that means that my assistive technology wasn't causing that slowness. Means that Firefox itself got slow. So I think it's important to remember sometimes that technology fails, and sometimes it isn't anything to do with what we have to do to make it work to talk to us.
We'll talk about glorifying things that are no longer. If all of the analysts, I shouldn't say all of the analysts, but if some analysts are to be believed, one of these days Facebook's going to disappear. I think
you said
that's
this
kind
was
of
a Facebook free zone. I'm disappointed.
Yes.
No.
Wow.
Well, they're right.
You know, I mean,
everything comes.
I suppose it will someday. Everything will someday.
The next new fad. I think we've kind of gotten used to being entertained. Even, I mean, how many times have you guys seen on Twitter, "Hey, does anybody know of a new game? Anybody know of a new app? I'm bored. I want to play with something new." And I think we're really conditioned to respond like that now, far more frequently than we used to be. And I think that something will replace Facebook, not because it's better, not that that would take much. just my opinion, not that of Saratech and staff. But just because it's new, because it's shiny.
And social networks, it's easy to get burnt out. It's easy for people to become enamored and move on to the next thing. Let's talk about Zello. The rise of that. I mean, that had a moment there where Zello was everywhere, and now I don't see nearly as much about Zello as I do, say, Audioboo. And so there are things that happen online that, like Lisa said, is just the pet rock of the month. And Facebook is becoming one of those things. And this is always – I always tell everybody on staff here at Saratech, I've always come back to the line, this is not your father's Oldsmobile, right? Because that ad campaign said that this Oldsmobile is made for you, the young guy, because really you say Oldsmobile, that's your dad, your granddad, your, you know, what have you. Well, if Facebook is being used by more than 50% of people over the age of 55, well, then Facebook's no longer super cool anymore. That's what your grandmother and your mom are using.
Yeah. And of course we know that the iPhone isn't going to be cool forever either. We've already covered that in last week's show. So, Is it possible that we won't be cool? No, that's not possible. We're going to be cool forever.
No.
We're going to stay cool, man.
Lisa and Ricky alone keep us grounded, dude. No.
I agree. Totally.
No.
You and I may be dinosaurs someday, but absolutely. Lisa and Ricky will still be cool.
Absolutely. Totally agree.
Speaking of dinosaurs, I have a little personal story to share. I was talking to some people last week, and I am certainly not going to put my age on this podcast, but let's just say they were significantly younger than I am. And we were talking about weird and interesting ways to use technology. And I said, well, you know, I didn't really set out to do anything different, but way back when, I used a Braille and Speak and an external modem, a 14.4 blazing fast external modem, and connected to bulletin board systems. And I said, have you guys ever used bulletin boards? Assuming they'd say, oh, yeah. And the one said, I think I've heard of them. And it was like, ooh, direct hit, you know, like,
ouch.
It seemed to me in one sense like it was just 5 years ago, but really it's been much longer than that. And it really does amaze me the speed with which our technology comes, evolves, or doesn't, and then moves on.
What was the name of the zone? Was it BlinkLink that was really popular back in the day?
It was, but actually, I think I knew about that, but there was, the Braille Forum had done an article about the Global Blind Exchange, which was a BBS out in California. And I lived in a fairly small town. There were no other blind people around that I could talk to. And this article was very how-to. Step one, you do this. Step two, you do this. And I was not working at the time. I was looking for work, hoping at some point in some way to use the internet to help me find a job. And really wanted to learn because it seemed like it was coming. And I had, in my usual obsessive way, done about 2 years of research and asked lots of questions. So when this article came out, I thought, I can do this. This is very easy. You just follow the instruction. So I would get online around 11:01 p.m. when the phone rates went down. And I would call California. And I learned what to do and how to do it and how to get around. And then did end up checking out BlinkLink and then was able to find local bulletin board systems. They were not blindness specific. That was really fun. I remember one that I logged into. It unfortunately was my favorite. And the reason I say unfortunately is because it had some sort of graphics. So the deal every day was log in, Braille and Speak encounters graphics, goes entirely out of its mind and freezes up. Then you reset and you go back in. And it works like a charm. Hmm. So to me, that was just part of my history. I mean, I still have friends who give me tons of grief because I thought that FidoNet was a bulletin board system that was specific to people who had dogs. Yeah, don't even. There are some things that in retrospect just should not be shared, and I have a feeling that was one of them.
Oh, hey, that's
coming up after the break, we'll be talking about NVDA, Best Buy, the FCC, travel. I know it sounds like how could all those stories actually fit together, but we just found a way to make the Xbox 360 connect into the Braille Note. So, hey, always be amazed on what we can actually get together in the jigsaw puzzle of life here on Serotalk.
Super coming up, Blue is your friend.
After the break.
Looking for a cross-platform solution to quickly convert printed materials and PDFs into text, MP3, or DAISY formats? Check out Serotech's DocuScan Plus. For just $299, use DocuScan Plus on your Windows or Mac computer. Store documents in the cloud for easy retrieval and access them from anywhere. For more information, visit www.docuscanplus.com.
Welcome back to Serotalk Podcast 112. And one of the stories that made news is actually one I'm very glad to see, and that is that the Digitize barcode scanning app for the iPhone was inducted into the Apple Viz Hall of Fame by a wide margin of votes.
It's a miracle. It's a Nancy miracle.
Yes, exactly.
Oh, awesome. That was nice. I actually bought that app just this week. And, you know, it does take some training, some getting used to. But I will say the website really does provide some excellent tips for good scanning. So,
yes, yeah. It really does.
And kudos to that organization for putting up some great apps and the community voting them in. We are very proud to be a part of the Hall of Fame with iBlink Radio. So awesome. Some great things out there and another great resource and definitely something you guys might want to check out if you haven't already. And definitely go back through our archives of our convention coverage because we've actually spoken to the Miracles before about that app.
And, you know, I don't want to beat this into the ground, but that's one of those apps that did get a little negative press for a while because it was a little tough to use. I mean, you kind of have to work to learn how to use it. And I think in its early development stage, it had some things to work out. And that's another one of those, I can't use this.
The iPhone camera doesn't make that any easier with the limitations that it has.
Right.
I got that app a little over a year ago, and it's very gratifying to me to see it changing and developing. And, you know, I think that's the case with a lot of apps. It's good to remember that what you see now does not mean that that's what it will be for good or for bad.
Right.
In the future. I mean, people say, oh, this is the greatest app. This is so accessible. And then they come out with another release and it's not, or vice versa. So it's really good to keep up on that. And just to keep in mind that you really can't let your knowledge stagnate. You have to keep in mind that it's always changing.
And you have to read the review and look at the date that it was written because something has changed or an update has happened, like you were saying. And that's why we try very, very hard on SPN to mention the date, the version, and the hardware that we're using. Because if you're trying to replicate our experience, we want you to know under what conditions we were doing it under. Because we feel very strongly about that you just can't make arbitrary things or absolutes about saying this app is not accessible. Well, today, it could always change. There's always hope.
Speaking of things that continue to develop, how about NVDA 2012.2 RC2? That's just impressive to say if you can get it out. They are continuing to release and continuing to improve their screen reader. NVDA continues to improve its access to Adobe, and Adobe is working with NVDA to make these improvements. So it's really great to see mainstream developers partnering with assistive technology developers to make things work better.
I'm very happy to see the next article included and to let all of you know that there is a new app out. It is called VoiceBook VO, and I was really thrilled to be able to beta test this app. And it really has received mixed reviews. Some people say, oh, it has so far to go, it doesn't do this, it doesn't do that. And remember that it is in its initial release. But you know what? I love it because it does exactly what I personally want it to do. I'm not really a fan of Facebook. In my life, it's kind of a necessary evil. If I'm going to keep up with family and such and what's going on, I need to check it more than maybe once a year. And it's so clunky and it takes so long to go through. And if I see one more message some days about magic sprinkles and fairy dust and Farmville, I feel like I'm going to just lose my cool. So what VoiceBook does is it allows you to flick and you just flick down from one post to the next, to the next, to the next. And I can zip through my Facebook timeline. I can gather the pertinent information, and then I can go and I can do whatever else I'm going to do. I know that there have been some issues with comments and with liking statuses. The other thing, the language has been clarified a bit. You can also sort from newest to oldest posts or oldest to newest, whatever your preference is. So if you just want that ability to kind of get through Facebook and get it done, this is definitely an app I think you should consider. If you want to be able to upload photos and make comments and like statuses and such, you might feel that this app has a little way to go. But the developer is committed to enhancements and also to including those things which people want. And Jamie, you had a chance to talk to him.
I did. I had a chance to visit with Ben Vijard, who is the developer. And he and I visited, and coming up after the news, we will feature that interview here on this very podcast. Ben is a, to use his terminology, a high-functioning, legally blind person. So he's at that point where he has quite a bit of vision, and but yet still struggles with the same thing that many low-vision people do, and was really frustrated with the clutter of Facebook and was not finding any suitable alternatives. And so being a, as he puts it, a basement developer since he was 12, he, you know, set out to write an app for iOS. And I really like Ben's approach. He's there is going to be a pricing structure. If you want to just read comments and that's all you want to do, the app is free forever. You don't have to pay a thing. If you want to post comments and that sort of thing, he's going to charge you a whole $1.99, but you get 30 days of full functionality, which is kind of rare for apps. So I really think that he's really got the right approach, and I would encourage anyone who has any interest. And as Lisa said, it is this app is in its early stages, and so there are definitely some rough edges. But I personally, I'm kind of like you, Lisa. I need to read Facebook. I need to check up on what my family and friends are doing. I really did kind of feel out in the cold and hate the website, basically, and most of the mobile apps that I've looked at. This really does fit the need. And Ben has plans to increase what this app does. He eventually would like to add support of checking your timeline. He's had requests for people to be able to listen to videos, that sort of thing, or watch videos if you have some vision. So this app is far from finished.
Well, and kudos for people like Ben and then GW for doing GW's Connect to give us opportunities. You know, in the great grand scheme of things, we should always be pushing people to make their apps more accessible out of the box so we don't have to do these kinds of things. Mm-hmm. But for those who recognize that this is an issue, I think it's commendable. I mean, look at this idea about our Foursquare apps. You know, is Foursquare accessible? Yeah. You know, I love this conversation. And again, it falls back to what Lisa is talking about, that if we advocate and we're into it, then it may not be accessible today. You know, with the right comments and the and constructive criticisms, we can get that to happen. And I don't mean going into the app review and ripping it apart. We, on that Android show, interviewed a developer, and he said, look, I just don't really look at the comments in my app because usually they're snarky, they aren't very constructive, they're usually tearing you down, and they don't necessarily offer any opinions to make that better. Better yet, he can't necessarily go out there and engage that individual to find out what was happening. Maybe it was a user situation, or maybe it was a hardware problem. So he encouraged people to write him directly, and he's one of the few developers that I think we've interviewed that said, no, contact me because I really do want to make it better. But mm-hmm. I don't use Foursquare and I don't like Facebook, but what is the accessibility on Foursquare, Jamie? Are you a check-in junkie?
Yeah, I am, and it's so funny because I honestly thought I would use Foursquare for about a week and be done, and it's actually quite fun. And I can't even really explain why. It's like you go places, you check in. If you have friends that are close by, you can see where they are and you earn badges. It's like if you – I went to a mall the other day and I'm now a mall rat. It's like, great. I don't think I would have chosen to use that term on myself. But if I check into X number of malls, I will move up to level 2. And actually, in some cases, you actually get like a little coupon that if you show to the store clerk, you get a little discount on something. So there's actually a little incentive to use Foursquare. The one thing I noticed is that it's starting to look a little more Facebook-ish. There's a like button that you can there's a comment button.
So now it's more
a little
Yelp.
More social networky.
Yeah, it sounds more Yelp-like where you rate restaurants.
A little bit.
And it feels a little more Yelpy. And that I guess is okay. But do you share? I mean, do you share that to your Facebook or your Twitter or other social medias? Because I don't think
I do.
I don't think I see your check-ins as often as I do other people on staff.
Right. I'm actually just now starting to kind of get into it, I guess you might say. But yeah, I actually do. And It's like I went to the city the other day with my wife for my birthday, and we kind of, you know, went different places, and I checked in, and it was kind of fun to have people comment on Twitter on places that I was. Like, I went to Starbucks and had comments about that. So it's kind of...
From Macy.
It's kind of... Yeah. Yes. There you go.
Yes, exactly.
That's a callback to an earlier episode, everybody. I'm sorry.
You don't like Starbucks.
I sort of went inside baseball there to pick on Jamie.
But it's not my thing. I was going to say, to actually answer your question, yeah, it is still accessible. And it's different, but not, there are no showstoppers there.
Yeah.
And I'm paranoid. I think I can count on one hand the number of times I've checked in with Foursquare. Because to me, it's just like waving a big sign that says, I'm not at home. Come take my stuff.
Yeah, pleaserobme.com is a great site about that. And I see if it's like NFB or ACB at a summer show where I think that kind of sort of helps or lets people know or something like that, it's already assumed that you're traveling anyway. I guess that doesn't bother me as much. But like you said, if it's just, you know, May 12th at 3:30 p.m., I don't think I need to let everybody know I went to Baskin and Robbins. So I get that. It's just whoever you are and your personality, I guess.
Yeah. I like fun city names. They're interesting sometimes when people will check in. Someone the other day checked in from Kissimmee, Florida, and that was kind of cool.
Kissimmee.
You know, or like did one from Hershey Chocolate World.
Yes,
you know,
that was the envied one. That was one where I went, aw. that's like.
Well, Jamie was killing me the other day with Red Robin. I'm like, I could eat a burger.
or Mr. Calvo when he went to Disney World and he I didn't realize there were check-ins on the rides, and it was like, oh,
that's funny.
Man, that's not
problem.
Right. That's so not right.
I have a problem with his check-ins because he and I both share a love of various ethnic foods.
Yeah,
I'm guessing he likes a lot more heat, a lot more spice.
Yes,
but I see, you know, this Greek place or this Indian place, and it's like, ooh, yeah, sounds good.
Well, enough about food before I get really hungry. The FCC is seeking nominations for the second annual Chairman's Award for Advancement in Accessibility. We'll put a link to some information in the show notes. Basically, recognizing innovations in the field of accessibility and technology. Nominations are from May 31st through July 31st. We'll let you read more about that. Perhaps you could mention Serotech and some of our products. We would definitely appreciate that if you did such a thing. A bit of good news for the National Federation of the Blind. The United States Secretary of Transportation is going to address the convention in Dallas. It's going to be Tuesday, July 3rd at 4:30 p.m. Central Daylight Time. It's going to be really interesting. I mean, obviously, travel is extremely important for us and accessibility and that sort of thing. So to hear what the Honorable Ray LaHood has to say about that will be quite interesting.
Yeah, and NFB had quite a coup this week also with the release of their Newsline app.
Yeah, I played with that a little bit.
I think just about everyone that's eligible has gotten it and played with it, you know, who's interested. I like it. There are some things that I think, okay, I would like this to be changed or that to be different. But I like when you're looking at a newspaper, if you set your phone to read by headings, you can just flick between the articles. And then if one interests you, you can read it. It's a lot more, I think it more closely emulates the experience that someone who could see has of being able to skim the newspaper for relevant things instead of listening, for example, to all the list of local students who made the honor roll for the third semester. I mean, I'm very happy for them, but I just don't need to know about all of them.
Right.
Well, that, and there are other things like Flipboard and other apps out there that allow you to kind of sort of consume the information in the way that you want to. And it's nice that we have an app now that we can actually kind of aggregate a lot of great content at one time. You had mentioned earlier in the podcast about people saying, you know, I'm bored. My gosh, I've got so much media and so many apps and so many ways to get to accessible text and reading and books. And there's not enough time for me, but this definitely is a time sink. Yeah. This and the Access World app. And I mean, you know, this is the golden period. This is a great time for us.
You know, the NFB app, it is a time sink, but really it's a time saver because In my previous job, I worked as a rehab teacher, and I had a lot of older clients. So much as people will stereotype and maybe make old age insinuations, I do check the obituaries to see if any of these people with whom I've kept in touch off and on are still among the living. And, you know, you really, my gosh, it's kind of sad to actually listen through all of those. I mean, first of all, it takes time, but it is very sad. And so it's nice to just be able to kind of flick through and, you know, walk away with a little smile because you don't know anybody who made the obituaries today.
And it wasn't you.
Do that with, exactly. There you go. That's the biggest one of all. But the fact that you can do that with obituaries, with articles, the way they handle TV listings is a little different because they give you basically all the information on one channel. And I don't know. I don't know how I feel about that yet. Part of me really likes it because, for example, if there are channels that you in general watch a lot and you like their content, you can just browse that channel's lineup. And there are ways to, online and elsewhere and with other apps, to check and see instead of what's on Animal Planet, for example. Okay, it's 7:45. I want to watch something at 8:00. What's on at 8? There are other ways to do that. So personally, I like this kind of channel view sort of way that they're presenting information.
Well, compared to the old TV guide style grids where for those of us with low vision, you had to put your finger on that and then kind of move your finger across to the right, looking at the grid till you got to the right hour. You know, it's kind of neat to be able to just have one singular view of a channel because if you're watching BBC America and there's a Doctor Who marathon and there may be a certain episode that you're looking for, well, then you don't necessarily have to scan in an odd way to be able to find a specific information that you're looking for. So it's kind of neat. And you mentioned obituaries. I'm not sure if I told the story here on Sarah Talk, but IAAIS that I spoke at last month, the radio reading services, I used to work at a radio reading service in Houston, Sight and Sound Radio, back when there were Houston Taping for the Blind radio. And we had an old 386 computer, and it was very easy to make a mistake and have it skip a program. And I skipped the obituaries and grocery ads one night. And of course, the number one program on our station was the obituaries and the grocery ads. And I got to meet a lot of our very vocal listeners and who reminded me.
Worst mistake ever, Joe.
Yeah. You sit there and go, well, who would read that? Well, a lot of people, believe it or not. So you're not alone in that. Speaking of things that are coming out from the radio reading services, hey, Best Buy has got something new coming out, doesn't it, Jamie?
It does. A radio that is called the Narrator. I find that interesting, just the name of the radio. I'd really like to hear a demo of this thing. I kind of want to see what it sounds like,
and
how it really works.
On the website.
Accessible World, actually.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
This past Monday, accessibleworld.org.
That's right.
Had several people on who were instrumental in the creation and testing of the Narrator, and you can listen to a demonstration that is roughly an hour in length, and they play the radio, and they have they describe it, and their audience questions. It's pretty informative.
And you can actually go and pre-order it after you hear the Accessible World demonstration, because Best Buy is taking pre-orders now for the Narrator, just in time for the summer season.
Yeah, I believe it sells for $99 or something in that neighborhood.
Yeah, very reasonable price.
Sounds like a great gift idea.
I kind of wish someone would do that with a police scanner, a talking police scanner. You could punch in frequencies and be kind of
cool.
You
know, there's some apps that'll let you do that, like TuneIn Radio will let you do that.
Really? I did not know that. I need to check that out. I keep hearing about TuneIn Radio.
There's 50 Radio, too. That's another app. I've been at people's houses where they have those police radios on all the time.
Oh, and I can't do
that. Trust me, frequencies
is
not what I want to punch.
No.
After a while, it's just like, turn it off.
Definitely.
To me, that can be as boring as some baseball games, like a 0-0 14-inning game with lots of defensive plays, but it might be a little boring. And the reason why I mention that is MLB accessibility has had some wonderful things happen to it over just the recent period of time.
Indeed, the At-Bat app for iPhone and iPad is accessible. So good for those guys. They've done some great work there.
Now, if we can get NFL to be a little better, that would be nice because that app, that app updates every time, and I get so depressed. Like, they just recently did the 2012 NFL schedule, and I might as well just go to NFL.com to read it, because that app is not fun.
I'm not a sports fan, but I have friends who are, and I can't think of a blind person that I know of who is a sports fan with an iDevice who does not absolutely love at-bat. Mm. I mean, among sports people, that just seems to lately really be the talk of the town. So it might be something worth checking out.
Well, what about barcode apps?
Man, I want one of these scanners. JJ Meadow posted a demo over at Blind Bargains of the Quantum Omnidirectional Barcode Scanner that works along with the BC Scan site. And there's an app that you can download, or a program for Windows, and I believe the Mac, if I'm not mistaken, that in conjunction with this scanner will just do some amazing things. He scanned a book. You could purchase it from Amazon. If it's available on Bookshare, you can instantly download it from this program. If you have a CD and you scan it, it will not only let you purchase the CD, but you will tell you the tracks that are on the CD. So the AT guys have done some great work on this combo, on this app. And the scanner is, like, the introductory price is, I believe, $149.95. So reasonable, affordable, I think could be really useful. So we have a link there. Go check that out.
Yeah. And small.
And the Blind Bargains app rocks too.
Yeah. I thought the barcode scanner would be enormous. And the way that he described it, it's really not. It's little.
Right.
I mean, there was so much in that demo. The things that really caught my attention were the fact that you could use it with a computer, but you could also use it with a note taker. So let's say you have a note taker and you're shopping and you want to maybe learn if a product is gluten-free. Mm-hmm. You know, you could take this along and very easily scan that information. And speaking of knowing whether or not something is gluten-free, they interface very nicely with the Directions for Me website. And I use that quite a lot. I actually had a customer who called to find out if our products would allow him to scan a can of soup. And I was able to tell him about this barcode app from AT Guys, barcode program, and said, but if you know the name and you just need to know information about it, you can go to Directions for Me. And so they've really done a lot of work and partnered with some great, really informative sites to make this something that is really indispensable to anybody who needs to know what is in or on a package, a CD, a book, so many things.
Coming up after the break, some things coming up here on the Serotalk Podcast Network, and your emails and iReports right here on Serotalk Podcast 112.
My name is Tom Thornton.
And my name is Cindy Thornton. We've been married 38 years, we're retired, and this is how we live united.
We play golf and we travel, but we also decided we were going to give to and volunteer with United Way at our community free health clinic.
I do the nursing at the clinic.
I work the front office, checking in patients, greeting them, making them feel comfortable.
United Way is how we contribute, because we know our time and money are going to the right places, the places that need it most and implement it best.
Judging by the thank yous we get at the clinic, I'd say we're doing the right thing with our retirement too.
We even get a few bless yous. It's incredible.
We're Tom and Cindy Thornton. We volunteer at our community free health clinic, so we don't just wear the shirt.
We live it.
Give, advocate, volunteer, live united. Go to liveunited.org, brought to you by United Way and the Ad Council.
We're back here on the Serotalk Podcast, and Lisa, you just finished a Serospectives that was quite good. You want to tell us a little bit about what happened during this month in tech?
Well, we were joined by several people. First of all, our co-host, Steve Sauzin, was there, and our fearless keeper in order of all things document-related, Joe, was mostly in the background, but keeping everything moving. You know, if you've never checked out Serospectives, I know that we have a lot of people who download, but really, there's nothing like being there live and experiencing Accessible Event. And you can see the documents and the articles that we're referring to, that we're discussing, you know, in real time. So I would encourage you sometime to visit us when we are live. And if your schedule doesn't permit, of course, we'd love to have you on the downloads. We had three guests last night. We had Maury Hill of AI Squared. We had Deb Lewis, who does computer consulting work for the state of Washington and is just an all-around knowledgeable techie. And speaking of all-around knowledgeable techies, we also had Joshua Loya with us. He is primarily more well-known for his martial arts training and background, but he's very articulate and very techie. He has done some tech training work, but he's one of those people that is sometimes just quietly in the background, keeping up on technology and able to provide very good commentary about the directions in which it's going. So it was very enjoyable. We had an excellent group, and our thanks to all who participated, whether you were a guest who was presenting or whether you were a guest who came and listened and added your well-thought-out comments to the dialogue in the text chat area.
And the cool thing about Seraspectives is you listen to this show or Triple Click or Android, and you're getting kind of a perspective from hosts that you kind of have learned to understand might have a certain feeling about something. In fact, some people probably hear a story as Jamie's introducing it and know Ricky or Joe has already got an opinion on that. The thing about Seraspectives is that it's the community's voice. We go out of our way to find others in the community who are just as knowledgeable, if not more knowledgeable, about certain subjects than ourselves, and give them the microphone and let them tell you their feelings, because it really does matter about what the community has to say about a subject or another. And that's just kind of the way that we've always felt about Seraspectives. And it's live radio. It's not as produced as these podcasts are, because we have time to make edits and take a drink of water and take a second and reorder our thoughts. That is a live show, and what happens, happens, good or bad. And that's kind of the beauty of that particular show. So for some, the red light is on, chat is going, and it's just a magical experience when it all works right. And for the most part, it has. Thank you, Steve Sauchin, because he's been a great, great lead on the project with Lisa. Yeah. So the part about community that's really great is that we all help each other. And as we mentioned on Seraspectives, one of the ways that you can help out the Sera Talk podcast is rating us on iTunes, which we do appreciate those who have done that. Another way is to take our podcast survey. The podcast survey allows us to know a little bit more about what needs to happen on the shows and who you are and what works. And it's a very short survey. It doesn't take you very long. And the information isn't broadcast all over the internet. In fact, we don't get to see a lot of it. It's just very generality about it. And it's going to help us shape these shows in a tremendous way. So if you like our shows, if you like End of Line, if you like High Contrast, if you like all the things you hear on SPN, especially our upcoming convention coverage, definitely take a minute and go over to the show notes. Click on the link that says take the podcast survey, because you will be doing these shows a great favor and it will help us out a great deal. Thank you. Thank you so much for that.
And if there's something that you don't like and you have a reason why, more than just it's nasty, you know, we'd like to hear that too. So if you're bored and you're dying to play with something new, we encourage you to go through our survey. I took a look at it yesterday and it's very accessible, very easy to do.
Well, let's open up the mailbag and see what we have this week. We have two things, actually. We're going to start with a blog comment from Bazad. And Bazad says that the Nest thermostat from Apple that we talked about last week has some limited accessibility. Apparently, you can pretty much change the temperature with the app in your home, and that's about it. So it sounds like there's a ways to go maybe on making that really functional, fully functional, but at least it is usable to some extent.
And we also got in an iReport about a musical legend.
Hello, Sera Talk podcasters. This is Robert Carter calling. Just wanted to make a brief comment on podcast 111. Thank you all so much for mentioning Doc Watson, saddened by his death. I grew up in North Carolina and had the pleasure of meeting Doc a few times. He was a fabulous musician, wonderful stylist, and outstanding guitarist. And for people who would like to know more about Doc Watson, I did happen to discover that there's a really great album available on iTunes, maybe on other Amazon and other places as well, but I know it's on iTunes. It's Doc Watson and David Holt, and the album is called Legacy. And it's a series of interviews with Doc talking about his life, interspersed with songs that the two of them play, or sometimes Doc just plays songs. And at the end, there's actually a little concert that was done somewhere in Western North Carolina. It's about a two-hour-plus recording, so it's quite long, but it's only $9.95 on Amazon. So for anyone who cares, check out Doc Watson and David Holt, Legacy. It's really cool. A lot of great information there. All right, you all take care, and thanks for the great podcast. Keep it up.
And thank you, Robert, for that. I actually went and purchased the album right after I listened to the iReport, and it is excellent. I haven't gotten very far into it, but there's a lot of interview material, as Robert says, along with the music. And Doc Watson's life is fascinating. It's interesting to hear the man himself speak of his life as a blind child and growing up in the hills of Kentucky and all of that. It's quite interesting.
And while Jamie and Joe were listening to those well-thought-out comments about Doc Watson, I slipped another letter into the mailbag while they were not watching. Figuratively speaking, of course. This was something that I actually meant to submit myself as a comment and thought it might be a good idea to pass on to our listeners. The Saratalk podcast had discussed the June 1st ending of Tell Me, and we're glad to tell you that as of the date of this recording, Tell Me is still alive and well. There have been rumors that another company bought out Tell Me, and that's why the service is continuing. But at this point, we don't have anything to substantiate that. So if you do, please feel free to send us an iReport or to send us email.
Very good. Thank you for sharing that bit of information. That will be most appreciated by many, many people, I'm sure. It's time now for Roundabout. Well, this week we have a story about a man who predicted the internet, ebooks, all of that. He did it in 1934. This is just a really interesting article to me. The gentleman was Paul Ouellette. I'm not sure exactly how to pronounce that, but that's close.
Glad you did.
Yeah.
Yeah. Thank you, speech.
Yes. What he suggested was that a person might call a librarian with a question on the phone. This librarian would be in a place with many, many books, and the librarian would find the answer, would televise the page of the book that had the answer on it to a screen for the person to look at. He suggested that maybe you could divide the screen into multiple parts, four or even 10 if you needed to consult more than one document at a time. And that, maybe at some point you could actually replace books, and these televised books, as he called them, would replace ink and paper. And that maybe even it would all be automated someday. There's a YouTube clip of, I believe, this person himself speaking. He's very emphatic, very passionate, and very dramatic about what he sees. And the guy was just, it's so eerie to listen to how close he really was to what we have today. So it's amazing how people can foreshadow the future.
I like reading, I don't know exactly what you would call it, for lack of a better word, computer-related fiction.
Mm-hmm.
I remember there was a book that came out, I don't know, I'm thinking it was about 1994. And it was called Lingo, and the NLS had it on tape. It was about this computer that basically grew in intelligence and picked up things through speech recognition technology. And, you know, a lot of these things weren't available. They were really in their infancy. And the amazing thing about this story was that not so much, you know, that everything happened the way that they said, but that it could happen. Mm-hmm. And so I love reading these computer fiction kinds of stories, both older ones to see how much of it actually has come true, and newer ones to take a potential look at where we could be going.
And wow, what a week it was losing Ray Bradbury.
Yeah.
Speaking of someone who saw the future in a certain way,
yeah.
I was so influenced by Fahrenheit 451. And, you know, the Martian Chronicles and so many, many others, those were classics that I read as a young boy, along with my Tom Swift novels and early Robert Heinlein. So it was. It's interesting to see those who saw the vision beforehand. I'm looking to read a book by Christopher Booker called The Seven Basic Plots, Why We Tell Stories. Mm. And it kind of goes into the idea of what stories have been told and why we carry over these seven basic plots in most of our stories. Mm-hmm. And some of it is like overcoming the monster and, you know, rebirth and these kinds of plots that just seem to click with all of us and why these seven stories more than any other are the ones that we want to read about. And you know, some of that is just inherent in who we are as human beings. And I think Ray Bradbury had a really interesting way of catching on to that and telling a wonderful story. And I'm going to miss because he was doing his interviews all the way up to practically his passing. So he was always, you know, very easy to like Arthur C. Clarke.
Yeah.
Very out there and had a lot of great information. And I don't know if I can ever read everything he wrote. Because again, we're back to all that, all those materials and all those things that are now accessible and available to us.
You know, Ray Bradbury's short stories started showing up in my reading books when I was in about the sixth or seventh grade. You know, they'd have these books of all kinds of short stories by various authors. And the stories that I still remember, the stories that really stuck in my head, were by him. I think he had a rare gift. Like you said, for telling the future. I mean, we started this podcast talking about how passwords were compromised, and part of the problem is the interconnectedness of everything. And some did nail it, but really, who could have guessed the level of interconnectedness that we have now? And sometimes when you read these fiction authors, you find out that they really had a vision for this stuff.
Yeah, and so many people were influenced by them. It was for End of Line. We read Altered Carbon by Richard Morgan, and he talks about one of the – he has certain planets that are named after authors. So it's a Bradbury was a world, and Harlan, as in Harlan Ellison, was a world, and all these, you know, ones that influenced him. And there's some other great ones out there. If you've read Ready Player One by Ernest Cline, or Daniel Suarez with the Demon and Freedom books. Read Demon first. Don't read Freedom first. Freedom's a sequel. Those kind of sort of hit on future tech. And of course, you know, there's the classic, you know, cyberpunk stuff like William Gibson. And I can't believe, you know, Ricky is probably sitting there listening to this MP3, yelling at it now, going, they're having a discussion about books and I'm not there.
Yeah. Yeah.
This is why it's fun to be Ricky sometimes. I'm enjoying this book discussion.
Me too.
Well, we enjoyed having you on the show, Lisa. Thank you. Thank you.
My pleasure. Thank you for having me.
You listening can connect with us. Write to us, resources@sarahtalk.com. Go to the blog show notes page and leave a comment. We'd love to hear from you. Leave an iReport on your iOS or Android device. Or call 866-997-2522. When you're over on iTunes, rate us, please. Write a review of the podcast. Make it very nice and positive, if you don't mind. We would love to hear from you. Coming up next, my interview with Ben Vijard of Active Information Systems about VoiceBook VO. Until next time, have a great week, everybody.
Thanks for listening.
I'm joined today on the Sarah Talk podcast by Ben Vijard of Active Information Systems. And today we're talking about a Facebook app for iOS. And the name of the app is VoiceBook VO. So, Ben, welcome to the Sarah Talk podcast.
Thanks, Jamie. Great to be here.
Now, the name of your company is Active Information Systems, Inc. Is that right?
That's correct.
Okay, very good. You guys have been around a while. I was kind of looking at your bio on your website. Tell us a little history of the company.
Well, I'm one of those guys who've been programming in his basement since he was 12. And early in my professional career, I stepped out on my own and just started my own company. Did that for several years ago, and then have taken a hiatus since then and gone into consulting, but have kept the name around and jumping back into it here with the iOS platform. So I have a various and a sundry past, but I'm looking forward to the future.
Now, and I don't normally ask this question in an interview, but I think it's kind of significant today. You do have some vision, right?
Yes. I'm one of those kind of fun people who are in between the lines a little bit. I'm just barely legally blind, if that is a phrase. So I'm actually fairly high functioning and spend most of my time in the normal corporate world, but have, you know, a fondness for screen readers because I use them quite heavily for browsing the web and whatnot.
Very interesting. Yeah. So you have some very unique challenges, actually, then, that many of us who are totally blind are not going to probably really appreciate. But the reason I think that's significant is because the app that we're talking about today is born out of a frustration you had with Facebook. Have I got that right?
Sure. Essentially, I got turned on to the iOS platform a year and a half, 2 years ago by my sister. Thank you, sister, who showed me the accessibility features that it had. I had been looking around for various cell phones and whatnot with accessibility and didn't even realize that that was all in the platform. So I became a fast and hard addict of iOS due to the Zoom features as well as the VoiceOver. And started looking around for productivity apps for my own life to increase my ability to tackle things. But one of the frustrations I regularly ran into was this whole Facebook thing. It was becoming predominant in life, getting updates from family and invitations to do things. And when you hadn't kept up with your Facebook feed, you were losing out on things from time to time. To sit down at a computer and read through Facebook was a very unpleasant task, just because it's laid out so visually that it just took an extraordinarily long time for me to get through a feed. So I really felt like there's got to be a faster way of doing this for folks who have print disabilities such as us. It looked around and just wasn't finding a lot. And that's when I kind of started perusing the AppleViz and other accessibility sites looking for this kind of an app and just did not find it and heard a lot of frustration out there. So I, being the guy who programs in his basement since he was 12, said, hey, I can write that. So I sat down and started to.
It's very interesting. I actually know someone who is beta testing for you. I just learned about this app on Twitter just this week. How long has it actually been out?
It was released on I want to say it was May 24th.
Okay.
Kind of the silly story is that it was released right as I was leaving town for a vacation. And so I nearly shut it down and took it out of the store because I wouldn't have a chance to do any marketing. But by the time I got back from my vacation over the weekend, one of the beta testers had not really leaked it, but had announced it and kind of lit up the forums and Twitter and people were pulling down. It was actually really, really gratifying.
So talk to us a little bit about how you approach Facebook, because as you say, it is so visual and there obviously needs to be a way to filter out the clutter and to maybe get at the information that a person is really interested in. So how did you go about that?
I would have to think about how I processed that, but essentially it was how would I like to get through Facebook? And for me, at least me personally, I found that I just wanted to be able to rip through it as quickly as possible.
Right.
The analogy being, as I'm waiting for my ride to come pick me up, I want to be able to catch up on what happened during the workday in 5 minutes or less. So that's really where the design interface concept came from, as far as having fairly minimal amount of information on the screen other than just what's in the posts from your friends and leave the screen as uncluttered as possible.
And for anyone who has not played with the app, the way that you do that is to swipe down or up, right, to actually move through the feed.
That's correct. So when you go into the app, it refreshes the feed from Facebook for a moment and then plops you right down on basically the first unread entry, an entry you have not seen yet. And it tells you who posted it, what type of post is it? Is it just a status update or a a photograph or a video or one of those game updates, and
yes.
It just tells you the text that the user entered and allows you to just swipe up and down to get to the next one. So you can literally read an entry in 4 seconds, swipe and read the next one, swipe, read the next one.
And the user is able to do some very important things like comment or post a status, or you can pretty much interact with the text or with the post, I guess, in any way that you would expect to be able to, right?
Well, I wouldn't say in any way, but
okay.
This first release is actually a fairly basic release. We're putting just kind of the most core essentials into it, because honestly, I wasn't sure what type of reception we were going to get, and I didn't want to take a lot of development time. So we put it out there fairly bare bones and with an eye towards adding more to it. However, took a different paradigm, as we've mentioned a little bit, in that I don't use hyperlinks. So there's not a link to click here to add a comment or to see how many likes you have. Instead, you actually, when you're on an entry, you just double tap the entry, and then that presents you with a menu allowing you to add a comment or to post your status or to like an item, follow a link, or in the future, we're going to have other fun things, such as being able to actually view the photograph if you do have some vision, or watch the video or listen to the video. But all those are kind of hidden behind a double tap menu, so that if you do just want to get through a clean read of your feed, you can do so very quickly. But if you do want to go into the interaction, it's just a double tap away.
And I have followed the AppleViz forum some, and one of the things that impressed me was that you yourself responded on there. And I'll have to be honest and tell you that I was planning on downloading the app anyway, but that really pushed me over the edge, if I can use that term, when you as a developer responded on that forum.
Well, thank you. Actually, the entire project started on AppleViz. Many months ago, I put a message out and wanted to put a focus group together. So invited folks from AppleViz, and I think I even cross-posted over in one of the Google groups just to collect a group of people and say, hey, what kind of frustrations are you running into? I'm really looking for more ideas than just a Facebook app. I'm wanting to try and help out in a number of areas, and we have some other applications possibly coming down the line, depending on reaction on this one. But it started at AppleViz, and so I'm monitoring that fairly closely. I do want this to be pretty much a community effort. One of the fun things about Facebook that I'm learning through this process is people use it in very different ways. And so a lot of the ways are not anticipated until you throw it out there and see how people react to it. So I want to get those reactions and start being able to adapt it towards those needs.
We kind of almost joke on the podcast. Well, we don't almost. We do joke on the podcast about how that Facebook likes to change their UI, you know, about once a day, it seems. Do you have any sense yet as to how much changes to Facebook might impact what you're doing right now?
I have a small sense in just looking through the developer information, and you can kind of get a rough timeline. They're doing more adding features than they are removing or changing how a feature works. They tend to change the interface around, but leave the meat all there.
Nice.
So I don't anticipate a large amount of impact on this type of thing, other than having to add like a timeline support, you know, fairly new thing.
So you've already stated that it is a very bare bones product. Let's go ahead and talk about some of the rough edges. If someone downloads it today, what are they going to find that maybe isn't quite ready for, you know, well, it's not perfect yet. Let's put it that way.
Well, sure. I can admit to slipping up here and there.
Don't we all?
Such as when you post a comment, it's going to say, hey, you're posting a status. That was probably the most embarrassing one, so I'll just throw that one out immediately. I do know that there are some frustrations in the refreshing of the feed. So when you have read through all your items, or when you do an action that forces the application to communicate back to Facebook, there are some smoothing out that can happen there. Under some circumstances, it jumps where you are in the feed and some other unpleasantries like that. But we're looking to address that in a very near-term release. In fact, within a couple of weeks, I'm hoping to get something in the store to address those things and make it a smoother experience.
Now, one of the things that was addressed on the forum is that there is a pricing structure to the app, and I think most people would reasonably agree that a developer deserves some compensation for their work. You are giving up a lot of time and a lot of energy to do this. So go ahead and tell us how that's going to work.
Sure. And I'm going to admit to it was kind of quietly placed in there, but it will become a little more apparent here in the very near future. Essentially, for 30 days, it's an open app and you can use it in any way you like. After that 30 days of evaluation period, if you will, the app will continue to run and you can use it to read your news feeds and to read comments and the additional information that's in there. However, to be able to post content, to add your status or a comment or to like things, there'll be a one-time charge of $1.99 just to be able to give us a little bit of support in continuing to develop these things and pay me back for some of these late nights that I'm doing this.
Yeah.
This is very much a side project for fun. I shouldn't say for fun, but a fun project that I'm doing on the side and hoping that it will advance and go somewhere that I can do a whole lot more with it.
So what are some of the best ways that the community can just kind of let you know their thoughts and maybe suggest features, which I'm sure you've already got a ton of? Actually, I can think of about 15 off the top of my head. That's kind of an exaggeration, but not much. To kind of let you know how the project is being received.
Sure. Again, I'm watching AppleViz and I'm watching the Google Groups and enjoy feedback there. A great way is to run by the website, and the link is in the App Store, and we have a support forum where you can actually write a message that'll come straight into my inbox, and I am reading all of those. As I come across these ideas and aggregate them a little bit, I've got an article on the website saying future enhancements that we're looking at doing, and I will add that to it. So if you check out the website and there's something that is not there that you think really ought to be, start a campaign and send me some feedback and have your friends send me some feedback. Another just great way to support this effort, just so you know, is just spread the word a little bit. Let everybody know that this is available.
And while you're on iTunes, go ahead and write a review. I mean, that's a great way to, you know, I very frequently will read customer reviews before I buy an app. And there have been a couple of times that I've looked at an app that I thought was interesting and seen customer reviews that were negative and was steered away. And conversely, I've seen very positive reviews that made me go ahead, so, you know, and purchase an app. So if you're over there and you're minded to do so, go ahead and write a review.
It would be much appreciated. Absolutely.
I know you've made some references already, but go ahead and kind of give us a little rundown of the highlights of what's on that roadmap that you mentioned a second ago that's on the website. What are you planning to add in the, you know, not too distant future to the app?
Sure. Well, as we mentioned, kind of the first iteration, if you will be a cleanup, taking care of some of these things that have been noted already. Make it a little more of a streamline, but looking to add more support for being able to view profiles of your friends. So there's currently no photos in there, which is kind of a misnomer for Facebook. You know, you were supposed to have a photo of your friend's face there.
Right.
So for people who have some vision, they do miss that. So we'll be adding that and the ability to look at photos and videos. I've got quite a few comments on wanting to be able to listen to the videos. Notifications is another sore thumb, if you will. You know, really need to have that type of support in the app. So mm-hmm. the ability to accept friend requests or even send them. Looking at that type of support and messaging, another common request that I'm running into. Those are probably some of the first ones. iPad support. I actually have somebody who has reached out to me and said they want to do a Spanish translation of it. So we're looking at that as well. Those are probably the next few items along.
Sounds like a lot of work, and it sounds like you really do need some support, need some encouragement. If people care about this, they need to let you know, and let's support with our dollars as well as our kind words, I think.
Well, again, that would be duly appreciated.
Excellent, excellent. Okay, I know you've already given it a little bit. Let's go ahead and give a rundown of your website and where people can learn about the company and then how to get the app, I think.
Sure. The company website is www.activeinfosys, and that's an SYS.com. Just think Active Information Systems. And there's a link right off the homepage there to get more information on the VoiceBook. To search it up in the store, I should mention there's two products that are fairly similarly named, and that has caused some confusion for folks. This product is Voice Space Book Space VO, VO as in voiceover. So if you punch up VoiceBook, you're going to get an inaccessible application, which is also a Facebook client, which has caused a number of people to be a little bit confused. So again, you want the Voice Space Book Space VO out of the App Store.
All right. Well, I'd like to thank you for joining us today, and it's been a pleasure visiting with you.
I've enjoyed every second of it.
We've been talking with Ben Vijard of Active Information Systems, Inc. here on the Serotalk podcast.
You've been listening to Serotalk. Visit us at www.serotalk.com. Send us an email at resources@serotalk.com. Send us an iReport with iBlink Radio, available in the Apple App Store and the Android market. Or leave a voicemail at 866-997-BLAB. That's 2522. We may read your email or play your voicemail in the next podcast. Join us next week as we explore all that life and the internet have to offer. Until then, may you have an accessible digital life.